This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. And it is episode 572, which might not mean anything to anyone. It certainly didn't mean what it needed to mean to me this week.
Oh, rats!
We have a tradition that on even boundaries, we celebrate the fact that we have reached even boundaries on years. And, or even boundaries. We celebrate the fact that we, well, even in terms of every 52 episodes. So every year on the anniversary or close to the anniversary of the first podcast, we are supposed to have a joint podcast where we get all the family in the car and we do the thing and we talk about the previous year and that sort of thing. That was supposed to be today. It was supposed to be today. I thought about it last week. I was like, oh yeah, it's 11 years worth of podcasts. Because it is episode 572. 52 times 11 is 572. It's always like the second week of March. But I hadn't landed the book last week. So I was writing like crazy and I made note of it. Oh yeah, okay, next week is going to be, I got to talk to Liz, got to talk to Alan, got to see if I can get the family together, got to blah, 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 blah. And then it was really focused on trying to get the book landed. Wrote all weekend, didn't get it landed through the weekend. Finally got it landed Monday night. It's good. It's great. Start. And so I was really focused on that. Wasn't really thinking about podcast. Started my read through on Tuesday night. That is all going fine, but you know, I'm going to have to plow here a little bit, but we'll get it done. I'm good. All is well. The plan is on the book. This is book 12, so this is the halfway point of the series, since there's 24 books in this series, the Windfall series. The plan is to spend this weekend and most of next week doing single pass editing, and then next weekend we'll probably shoot pictures of the kids. I have their costumes in already. Tried them on. That seems to be working. Try to get the cover, all that done, all the files built by, you know, a day or two after next weekend. Then I can get books ordered. Then I'm on to doing my taxes. Booyah! Get my taxes done. So I think I'm on track. Everything's going to be fine. But this last weekend, when I should have been mentioning to Liz and Alan, hey, you guys want to get together, and should have been mentioning to my wife, and should have been mentioning to the young lady who lives with us, hey, you want to get together? I was not. And in fact, I got to the point last night where I usually prepare for the podcast on Wednesday nights. I'm sitting there and I'm running my backups and I'm doing my finances and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, I got to get over and get my reading done. Got to get over. And I'm thinking, man, what was I going to talk about on the podcast? I had something already planned. And I'm looking through my bookmarks that I have, because when I come off across something that I think, oh, that's interesting, then I bookmark it. I'm going into the YouTube videos. I'm going into my history on browsing, looking through and going, what was it? I kind of find something, which I will be talking about today. I kind of find something and I'm like, oh yeah, maybe it was that. And start doing it. In the midst of preparing the notes last night, I bring up the file. I type 572 and this little thing in my head goes, that's 11 years worth of podcasts. I'm like, rats. So, we are breaking with tradition this year. And even though this is 11 years worth of podcasts, I'm going to see if the family can get together for next year, starting the 12th year of podcast, and we'll hopefully get everybody in a car and we'll go from there. Who knows, we may not have anything else to do because of the coronavirus, but we'll see. Isn't that getting interesting now? This is just getting interesting. It hasn't really laid hold of Missouri yet. So we got like one case, although I did hear about a case today of a guy was telling me his church's pastor has a daughter. I'll just do this obscurely in case it turns out to be the thing. Has a daughter who was in another larger city in Tennessee, we'll say, whom there experienced a case of someone, a child or somebody, with coronavirus at the school that their children have attended. But of course the school said, no, everything's great. We wiped down everything. It's great. It's all disinfected. And this daughter with her kids is going to drive to Missouri this weekend to come visit mom and dad. It's like, well, because it appears now, I was watching infectious disease expert on the Joe Rogan podcast. He's convinced that it's air transmissible, that the coronavirus is air transmissible, given the speed of infection and those kind of things. And which means that all this business about make sure you wash your hands for 2 minutes. Okay, washing hands is good. I'm not saying washing hands is not good. Washing hands is good. It's good. Wash your hands, good. Don't touch your face. That's good. All that stuff is good. If it's air transmissible, though, all you got to do is get close. So, you know, schools saying, no, we wiped everything down. It's great. Yeah, well, sorry. If it's in your air handling systems, you know, if someone sneezes and it gets sucked up and it gets dropped into another classroom, it doesn't matter whether you wash your hands or not. So we'll see. This is going to be very, very interesting. This will be very interesting. I've been chatting with friends this week, just as a quick sidebar. There is really an interesting challenge here, because some countries seem to have been able to slow it down by using fairly draconian measures of isolation and those types of things, asking people to self-quarantine. That does seem to help slowing it down, where other countries have not put those things into place, like Italy or Iran, and it's just, you know, it's just exploding. And that would make sense if it's air transmissible. But in order to do that, of course, you have to get everybody in their own homes. You've got to shut people down. You've got to stop things like March Madness. You've got to stop trips. You've got to shut down Disneyland. You've got to shut down any group that is over 500, which effectively in New York shuts down all of Broadway. I mean, you've just got to shut down everything in order to do that. And then the question is, how long are you going to keep it shut down? And are you just going to tank the economy? So I don't know. I mean, the CDC has this flatten the curve. If you haven't seen the chart, the chart's a good chart. You know, what they're trying to say is, look, we really, 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 if we can get this thing stopped at the front end for however long that means, you know, if it's 1 week, 2 weeks, that's something. If it's 3 weeks, that's something else. If it's 2 months, you've got to shut down the economy. Woo! Is that how long it takes? I don't know. It's really interesting. Because there comes a point where, you know, do you just need to let the thing run and then develop some antibodies to it? It's going to be very interesting to watch. So, anyways, I messed up. It is 11 years worth of podcast. It's supposed to be family. But it's not family. Maybe it'll be family next week. We'll see if we can get everybody together. By that point, who knows? We may just be going down to a house and just talking down there because we're going to be holed up in our houses trying to stop the spread of coronavirus. We will see. It'll be interesting. Thankfully, in this country, a lot of us can work from home. A lot of us can, and that's pretty amazing. And maybe that is part of what will be the salvation, that everybody just scatters. Everyone who can scatters to their homes for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and we just starve the thing out. It'll be interesting to see. I have to decide what I'm going to do about the Walmart. Because, you know, I won't see my friends at Walmart. Which will be sad. But anyways, tomorrow is Leprechaun Day, so that'll be fun. Leprechaun Day, this is actually the third year that I've worn this costume. And I put it all on a couple of days ago just to make sure all the pieces were there and I knew what I was doing, knew how long it would take to get dressed. Because I have breakfast with a buddy tomorrow morning and we get together at 6 o'clock, which means it takes about an hour to get dressed. So I need to be up 4:45, 5 o'clock, etc., etc. I would put all the stuff on and I was like, yeah, we're going to have to do some updates next year, do something a little fancier than this. But it's charming. It was one of the first costumes I actually did in full, so it'll be fun. People seem to enjoy it. I have a big hat, a really big hat. So that part of it's fun. Anyway, so that's coming up tomorrow. We're all good there. I have discovered that it is National Introverts Week next week, which is an interesting idea. A National Introverts Week. Just who suggested that it should be a National Introverts Week? And when they suggested it, was it a true introvert that was looking to celebrate introverts, or was it an extrovert who was looking to torture introverts? That's by drawing attention to them. That is the question. So I am going to do something for it. It's going to be really low-key and fairly subtle, but I am going to do something for it because it's Introverts Week. And then the week after that is Something on a Stick Day, which is fun. So anyways, all is well. All is very, very well. God is good. It's fun. I am working on an Easter costume as well that I have to make an egg, a large enough egg that I can step into it. But just wear it around my waist. Not that I have to fully climb into it, but at least wear it around my waist. I'm hoping to make some progress on that this weekend as well. I love solving problems. So I needed to make this egg that I could wear over my hips. It's large enough to wear over my hips. And that I could kind of cut apart and make it look like I'm breaking out of this egg, which of course I'm going to be way too tall to actually fit in this egg, but that's part of the visual humor of it. So I needed to make an egg. I needed to kind of jagged cut off the top. The top then becomes the hat, and then jagged cut off the bottom, split that in half, and then attach it to two pairs of chicken feet sandals. So now you've got this visual image of these two pieces of the eggshell down at my feet, one on each foot, top of the eggshell on my head as a hat, and then the main portion of the egg around my waist is, you know, like pants. And I'll wear a full bodysuit underneath it. I've got a full yellow bodysuit that I used for Mustard Day. And so I'll just wear that. And it'll be fun. And I'm going to, well, I'll tell you about it afterwards. So it'll be fun. It's a little visual pun and it's cute. Great. So I have to build this egg. So I'm looking around for patterns because you may not know, but the foam that is used to build the pads that you put down on the floor that are like puzzle pieces that you just attach them for children's playrooms. That's called EV foam. It's a closed cell foam. It's amazing what people can do with this stuff, because if you can get a heat gun, you can kind of bend it, plus you can cut it, use contact cement, and so they have all, there are all these patterns to make helmets and swords and just tons of stuff available for this. So I'm looking around, I just want to make an egg. I just want to make an egg, just a regular chicken egg. I can't find a pattern for it. There's all these sophisticated patterns, and there's dragon egg patterns, and I just want an egg, so I have to make an egg pattern for this. And so I find a profile of an egg that's shaped the way I want it, but it's just two-dimensional. So a couple of days ago, I'm thinking, okay, this cannot be that hard to do a projection to 3D on this. And I had seen enough things that I knew that all I needed to do was to split the three-dimensional shape into six sections. So you basically have six strips that are small at the top, get wider, then get small at the bottom, and you bend them and you kind of shape them a little bit with a heat gun, and then you glue them together and they make an egg. Ta-da! Okay, so I found the initial shape that I wanted, and then I needed to create the pattern out of it. Well, if you have 3D software, you can just, you know, spin it, lathe it, turn it into an object, tell it to do the six divisions, it'll cut it, it'll lay it out, boom, got it. I don't have that 3D software, it's free, I just haven't learned to use it, so now you got a problem. So now what you have to do is you have to convert this two-dimensional outline of an egg into a sliver, 1/6 of the egg. And I think to myself, well, that's not that hard. I'll just draw a center line in that two-dimensional shape, draw a center line vertically, and then I'll draw horizontal lines that go from the center line to the outer edge of that outline, and then I'll just reduce them by a third, by two-thirds. So they'll be a third of what they formerly were. And then I'll have my shape. So I go through, I do all that stuff, and I look at it, and I'm like, yeah, that is not right. It's just not even close to right, because it's too skinny. And I'm like, why is it not right? Oh, it's not right, because I have to do like a projection, because it's domed, and so you really have a different kind of geometry you're working with. And then I was like, oh, rats. Okay, how am I going to do this? And then I realized, Silly boy, you have enough math to do this. One of the sadnesses of my life is I never took calculus when I was in high school. The reason I didn't take calculus is because I came home early, but also the class that I was in, we were in Algebra 2, and it was supposed to get up into some of that. We didn't get up in some of that because people were struggling, and so I and the teacher worked together, and we helped people get through some of the stuff, and blah, blah, blah. I think so. We were doing matrices, and there were some of the people that just weren't getting the matrices, and so I was helping out with some of that, and if I recall correctly. I think I did. But I thought, when I thought about this, I said, wait, you've got enough math for this, because, and this is what's fun, solving problems and where it actually works, this is fun. Now, I haven't actually built the egg yet, so I don't know for sure that this works, but we're going to try that this weekend. Because I thought, wait a minute, you're looking at it from the side, but what you really need to do is you need to look at it from above. And looking at the egg from above, it really is just a whole series of circles. And these circles are smaller, and then they get wider, and then they get smaller. If you look at it from above, that's the egg shape. Basically goes from a circle with a radius of 0, that's the very, very top point, and then you've got a bunch of circles and they get larger, and then they get smaller, and now you're at the bottom. So if that's true, and I know what the radius at every given point along that egg is, So I have all these horizontal lines with this egg shape, and I know what that radius is all the way down. Then that radius should be a given percentage of what the projection should be for that slice that I'm looking to do, that I'm going to have to bend into a curve vertically. I'm going to have to bend it horizontally. I'm going to have to bend it into a curve. I should have all that. So I get my little trusty calculator out, and I'm like, okay, so I know. I know that pi times the diameter of a circle is the circumference. And then I'm going to divide that circumference into six parts because I want a 1/6 of a circle. And then I'm going to see where I am on a percentage based on what the diameter was. What is the percentage that I need to shrink? So I know what the radius is. And that radius is going to get multiplied by 2 and pi. And then I can take that value and figure out what 1/6 of that value is and what the ratio is between the radius and 1/6 of that value. And that gives me how much I need to shrink down all my little lines, my radius lines. That gives me the pattern then by connecting all the endpoints to the sliver that I need. It's like 52-53%. At least I think it is. I did do it in paper and try it, and it seemed to be okay. I just didn't have enough specificity at the top and the bottom. And so I didn't know how to cut those curves, because at the top and the bottom is where that curve has to be exactly right so that when you bend it, it all comes together. But it was fun. It was one of those little things that was fun that I just sort of, you know, stumbled around, and then I thought, that doesn't look right. Why isn't it right? And then figured out why it wasn't right, and then figured an approach to it. And I just don't do that mathy stuff like that very often. And so it's fun when I get a chance to do that mathy stuff and it actually works out, which I'm not really sure it has yet, but here's hope. Here's hope, hope, hope. Anyways, so I'm long on this already, but I do have an article. And this is something that is an issue that comes up over and over again, and it is related deeply, I believe, to the whole gender relationship stuff, but I find it fascinating. I find it fascinating, and I find our conventional ways of dealing with this type of thing not useful. Because none of it, as far as I'm concerned, is a solution. And what it comes down to is the way our society treats women in terms of their appearance. If you want to get a nonplussed reaction out of most women, I have found that the easiest way to get a nonplussed reaction, where women just look at you like, what are you talking about? So simply ask them the question, why beauty? Why is beauty important? What do you care what your appearance looks like? And out of that kind of basic question, there's a lot of interesting things that come out of this. One of the things that came out of, has come out of this recently, is a singer named Billie Eilish, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for. Her and her brother, they're very creative, fun stuff. I mean, it's really different. They've spawned a whole new thing. Did a great job. They're the ones who recorded the album in like their bedrooms, his bedroom at their little house in LA. And it just, they just walked away in the Grammys, 6 Grammys, something like that. It's just crazy, crazy, crazy popular, crazy successful. Well, one of the things that I always thought was really interesting about Billie Eilish is she dresses in extremely baggy clothes. And her viewpoint was, I'm going to dress in baggy clothes because I want you to, you know, listen to my voice, listen to the words, listen to the music, because what my body looks like is not important. And I thought that makes perfect sense. Now there was the occasional picture that would surface and the internet would just go crazy. Like there was a picture where she was too hot at some music festival, and so she took off her jacket and she was just wearing a tank top, and then everybody had to comment on her breasts, and everybody had to comment on her body shape, and everybody had to comment on, and as people are wont to do because they don't have anything better to do with their time. This brings up two interesting questions. First of all, why do people feel it's so necessary for them to comment on female bodies? Why does that have to be the purview of everyone to make comments like that? And then second of all, why do women care? Because honestly, with the costumes and things that I wear, some of them are tight enough and defined enough that you can certainly tell the shape of my body, and people do comment on my body. Typically women, like when I did the ugly Christmas sweater outfit, and it was based on a Christmas story, and I reproduced the leg lamp using one of my legs. I had a non-trivial number of women, let's put it that way, say, you know, that your leg looks pretty nice. Well, thanks. And one of them specifically said, you know, it's kind of, what did she say? It's kind of a bad deal or something like that. It's kind of discouraging when, you know, you look at a guy and he has a nicer looking leg than you do. And I just laughed. I said, this stuff doesn't, because it doesn't mean anything. Ultimately, it doesn't mean anything. We make it mean something. So why beauty? Why do we make this mean something? But if someone would say to me, wow, that's a really ugly leg. I wish you wouldn't have done that because it's just such an ugly leg. I wouldn't care. I just don't care. You know, when I wore the Valentine's Day outfit, I had velvet leggings on and no shorts or anything, just a coat over them that, it's so funny, is specifically cut. You know, it has this big cutout in it, and then the coat comes together to point a triangle. So basically, and it was a woman's coat because I wanted something that was a cleaner, narrower cut. And it's this woman's coat. And basically, the whole crotch area, the coat is cut so that it's just right there in this big square with this and these other two triangle pieces that basically point an arrow, right? It's like, oh, man. But I wore that with just velvet leggings, nothing else. Now, I took some precautions, so I wasn't showing anything, but no one came up to me and said, well, you need a better thigh gap. Your thigh gap isn't very large, which, as it turns out, I do have a little bit of a thigh gap. But even if they would have, I don't care. I don't care whether I have a thigh gap or not. I don't care. So why do so many young women care whether or not they have a thigh gap? Why do they learn how to post pictures and pose pictures where they rock their hips back a little bit and lean forward a little bit to where they can manufacture an artificial thigh gap that they wouldn't have if they were standing? Why is this so important? And when I first saw Billie Eilish and all the baggy clothes she was wearing, I was like, hey, there you go. This is someone that says, look, I don't want you to know everything about me. I don't care if you know everything about me. You can speculate about me, but I'm just wearing baggy clothes because I would rather you just listen to the words and the music. You would rather listen to my voice. You would rather watch the music videos. I'm just going to wear baggy clothes. Now, it's interesting because once she approached 18, wow, this is really long. I got to get this finished up. Once she approached 18, she started talking about, well, when I turn 18, you know, maybe I'm going to do some things if I want to feel, you know, desirable in a video and stuff, then maybe I'll change it up and I'll do some other things. So again, now all of a sudden this is becoming more important that she presents herself in such a way. And she's had plenty of people making all kinds of snide comments about her body because there was one or two pictures, that kind of thing. So obviously this becomes important to her, and it becomes important to her enough. Important to her enough that here recently she decided to have a message for all the people who were kind of body shaming her, who were trying to get her. Okay, so she did this whole video thing where she put these words up on the screen at the beginning of one of her songs before she came out. And the words are this: you have my opinions. You have opinions about my opinions, about my music, about my clothes, about my body. Some people hate what I wear. Some people praise it. Some people use it to shame others. Some people use it to shame me. But I feel you watching always, and nothing I do goes unseen. Now, you'll notice at the beginning, she started with, you have opinions, about my music, about my clothes, about my body. But then this very quickly transitions into just about her body. So yes, there's a whole bunch of people that have opinions about all kinds of stuff about her. But she specifically is addressing the opinions about her body. Okay, so some people hate what I wear, some people praise it, some people use it to shame others, some people want to use it to shame me, but I feel you watching also, and nothing I do goes unseen. Would you like me to be smaller, weaker, softer, taller? Would you like me to be quiet? Do my shoulders provoke you? Does my chest, am I, my stomach, my hips, the body I was born with, is it not what you wanted? The body I was, if what I wear is comfortable, I'm not a woman. If I shed the layers, I'm a slut. If I wear more, if I wear less, who decides what makes me, what that means? Is my value based only on your perceptions? I will add this, of my body, because that's really what we're talking about. Or is your opinion of me not my responsibility? Well, good for her, because our opinion of Billie Eilish's body shouldn't make any difference to her at all. Shouldn't. I mean, it's her body. She can do what she wants with it. I'm happy for her to wear baggy clothes. If she doesn't want to wear baggy clothes, she can wear what she wants. I'm just going to listen to the music and watch the music videos and see if they're cool. You know, that's it. But there will be all these people who got to be all camped on what does her body look like. And the question is, why? Why beauty? Why is it important to Billie Eilish? Because it's obviously important to Billie Eilish because she did this whole thing. And she not only did this whole thing, she basically did a striptease while she was doing this. Now, she recorded it. She didn't do it live. It was very carefully shot, so she would only show what she had only shown before, and that is a tank top. So the video that accompanied this, she was standing there in her baggy clothes in some kind of black goo that you couldn't really tell was black goo at the beginning. And then as she's going through all these sayings, she's slowly unzipping her shirt. And I mean, the crowd is going crazy. You know, all the women are screaming, oh my God, what's happening? You know, I mean, it's a fun video to watch because it's so evocative. And, you know, and finally she, you know, pulls off her coat and all she's wearing is a tank top. And the place is just going crazy. The women are screaming, they're screaming. And the video keeps going on and she's reaching down to take off her tank top. And as she's taking off her tank top and lifting it up, she's slowly sinking into this goo. And so by the time she gets her tank top off, you know, this goo is up to upper portion of her chest, so you really don't see anything. Man, I've got to close this thing up. And then as she's taking it off, then she basically, her whole face and everything just sinks down into the black goo, and then you don't see her. Okay, so she had taken a stand, wear baggy clothes. Great, that's fine. I respect that. Don't objectify me. I'm just going to wear baggy clothes, and I'm just going to sing my songs, and I'm just... Somewhere along the line, people talking about her, somewhere along the line, as she gets older, then it's like, gets to be important what they're saying about her body. So now, she has to confront the haters and the trolls. And how does she confront the haters and the trolls? She does it by trying to make herself more desirable by doing a striptease. And she tries to shame people. Well, not shame. She tries to point out the error of people's ways by saying, why is this important to you? You know, why do you have to have opinions about this? Why do I have to be something I'm not? Because it's important for her to, for people just to see her who she is and accept her body for what it is. And what I keep coming to over and over is why is this important? In conjunction with this, I came across an article, Emily Watson, this is from a couple of years ago, where, you know, she wants to be, she's going to college and wants to be respected as a businesswoman, this, that, and the other. And then she does a cover for Vanity Fair where it's basically all under boob. I mean, she's got this little top on that's kind of see-through, and it's strategically placed so you can't see her nipples, but her breasts are hanging out from underneath it, and people just went crazy. People went crazy. You're not a feminist anymore. I mean, everybody talked about blah, 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 blah. She set us back, you know, and her, there's this whole article about it, that they were quoting Naomi Wolf, and Naomi Wolf says that, well, you know, our culture just can't handle a woman who's both sexual and serious. So again, we're back into this issue of why is this important? Why is beauty important? And why is it important for women to be able to be sexual and serious at the same time? And I can give you an example. Wow, I gotta get done with this. I can give you an example. Several years ago, I'm in a meeting. We're discussing approaches, and we're talking about some app updates and that kind of stuff. And there was a young lady who was the user on the app, and she did a very good job. She's fine. There's no problem. But her appearance was really, really important to her. And she was in this meeting with multiple men, and she was nervous. And her response to being nervous was to chew gum and run her finger through her hair and keep flipping her hair. Because she's nervous. And so she was trying to cope with that. And the way she was trying to cope with that was to do these little coy behaviors. And the difficulty there is that our communications as human beings really exist on two levels. And the thing that has made everything that we do possible has been communicating on the upper levels. All the inventions that we have, all the research that we've done, all the science that we've created, all of the comforts that we've created, all of the advances in medical science, all of it has to do with our rational minds and our decisions and our abilities to communicate with each other on a rational level, to build tools, to teach, to understand history. All of it, all those advances have to do with the rational part of our minds. Okay? So when you're getting together in a room and you're trying to accomplish something, in business or art or whatever. You have to communicate with each other. Even making movies, I mean, you've got to sit down, someone has to write the script, you got to discuss the script, you have to, you know. Okay, while you're trying to do that, while you're trying to move forward, while you're trying to be serious, why should you have someone in the room who's trying to get beneath all of that rationality and move towards forward towards a goal? It's trying to go beneath all that and hack into other people's primitive subsystems. This young lady didn't realize what she was doing. It was just learned behavior. But the fact of the matter is, when she's over there chewing gum, you know, with her mouth open, and when she's flipping her hair and flipping her hair and flipping her hair, that's a learned behavior that people will give her preference because she's pretty. And they're not giving her preference because she has good ideas or because she can run a meeting well or because she has really insightful analysis of anything. They're giving her preference because she's pretty. And when we use this phrase, well, our society can't handle it when they're sexy and serious at the same time, what you're doing is you're mixing these two spheres of interactions. And you can say, well, why can't we mix those two spheres of interactions? And the difficulty is, if we're going to mix those two spheres of interactions, why should we just mix them with regards to women? Why, to use a really crude example, okay, if I, as a business person, came in every day and I always was wearing my jeans low enough that you could see my butt crack every time I turned around, somebody would say something to me. I'm not saying that's desirable at all, but it does produce a subsystem response. Disgust. And if I was using the fact that, you know, I was trying to throw people off in meetings so that I would have better ideas, and or I just like the fact that my butt crack is hanging out, why couldn't I make the claim, well, I just don't understand why I can't be serious and have my butt crack hanging out at the same time? Because you're operating at two different levels. And you're treating people non-rationally. And in treating people non-rationally, and man, I've got to get off this, in treating people non-rationally, you're setting them up to treat you non-rationally. And then once you factor in the flesh's exploitation of all these things, and pushing to distortions, now all of a sudden everything goes bad. Why does Billie Eilish care what people think about her body? Because the fact that her body is something that she can use lowers her anxiety level, because that's how she produces babies. That's why her breasts need to be protected. That's why her insemination port need to be protected, because this gets us to babies. This is basic, fundamental, reproductive drive. And when people are criticizing that, it raises her anxiety level, because A, she might not be able to attract someone to get her babies. You know, B, there might be something wrong with her. She can't make babies. I mean, these are really primal, non-rational pushes that the flesh is going to take, and it's going to distort. So you have someone who is quite a rational 17-year-old and yet is deeply affected when someone criticizes her body when they can't even see it. It's deeply affected because the flesh is pushing that. Okay, so that's why beauty. Why beauty is because there are deep fundamental drives that can help relieve the anxiety that women experience. And when they embrace beauty, it helps lower that anxiety. It's not really what they look like on the outside. It's their perception of what they look like on the outside that lowers the anxiety. It is their perception of what they look like on the outside that lowers or raises their anxiety. And so if people tell them they're ugly, it's very difficult for women to objectively look at themselves and make a judgment as to whether they're ugly or pretty, because it's their perception of their body that's the important thing that raises or lowers their anxiety. Now, on the flip side, why does society care so much about a woman, young woman's body like Billie Eilish? That caring is really generated by the flesh in all those people. And the reason that it cares is because it knows she's vulnerable. And since it knows she's vulnerable, it's going to go after her and try to stick in the knife. And they're going to go after her and try to stick in the knife as individuals and as a collection. So it's both their own flesh that's going after her, and it's the world that's going after her. And none of that is as difficult for a man to deal with. But men still deal with that in part. And I had a little experience, and then I got to wrap this up. I had a little experience this week where I guessed wrong. I just frankly tell you, I guessed wrong, but maybe I didn't, but you know, that's okay. I'm used to, if it's somebody I know and I show them pictures of the costumes and it's a woman, I'm used to the woman breaking into this really big smile and even laughing out loud. I'm used to that now. So I was at church. I was back at the coffee bar where we were. I was talking to a buddy. His girlfriend was there. His girlfriend's more of, it's an attractive young lady, but has probably gotten a lot of unwanted attention in her life. And she feels like there maybe has been a problem in the past. I mean, she has that little bit of wounded feel to her, which I hope not. Maybe she's just trying to be seriously minded, but typically that type of a feel means that something has happened in the past. We're chatting and stuff and happen to get on the subject of costumes and and my buddy, whom I'm talking to, has seen the videos that I do, and we're talking about the videos. And his girlfriend was just giving him blank stares. So it's always a little bit of a gamble if you really don't know somebody to expose them to something that's yours. But I thought, well, you know, hey, that's fine. Okay. So I pulled up a picture of the Tooth Fairy outfit. And I said, yeah, this was Tooth Fairy. Because we were talking about Tooth Fairy, and she was just looking at him like, what are you guys talking about? And she looked at it, and she kind of nodded, and she smiled a little bit. And she goes, oh, yeah, you look cute. And you know, then we went on. Okay. So not a demonstrative. She wasn't necessarily offended by it. She just didn't, you know, laugh out loud. Okay. Well, now then for like a day later, my flesh is going after that. Oh, you know, she thought you looked like a weirdo. Oh, she thought this. Oh, she thought that. Oh, she thought the other. She probably didn't think any of those things. And in fact, her reaction for her might have been a demonstrable action. That's not what's important. What's important is my flesh perceived that there was something it could get traction on, and then it's sticking in the knife and sticking in the knife. And I just kind of put up with that for a day, and then I was like, hey, this is dumb. You know, there is no problem here. And then it just goes away, and that's the end of that. Because the flesh couldn't get any traction. But obviously, with Billie Eilish doing this little thing where she's unzipping her coat and, you know, doing this, do I do this to you, do I do that? Obviously, what people have said about her body is under her skin, and so she's got to do something to... But that's not the solution. Because that'll just spur people on. Because all the flesh and all the people who are watching that, they already know the only reason she's doing it is because they've managed to get to her, and the destructive nature of the flesh is that, well, if we got to her a little bit, let's really get to her now. And I will guarantee you that while she did have support from a bunch of people for doing that, the trolls are going to come out in force because they're being driven by the flesh, and now they see, there, she just showed us that it's getting to her. It's a really interesting dynamic. It's really, really interesting. And obviously, I'm not a woman, so I can't say what the experience really, really is, but it sure feels like what should be happening here is diminishing the influence of the flesh, finding out what lies are being told. A, you'll never attract a man, you'll never have babies, you'll never this, you'll never that. All that's lies. All that's lies. She's not going to have any trouble with any of that kind of stuff. She's very successful. She's going to meet a lot of really successful people. She's not going to have any trouble when she's ready in time to find a mate, make some babies, reduce her anxiety level. Not going to have any trouble with any of that. The trouble is all in the perception of the mind. And that's why I don't really care if someone tells me that my thigh gap is not wide enough, because I don't care. I'm sorry this is so long. This is Phil Farron, and I'm done. This is 40, 50 minutes. I'm so sorry. I've made it home. I'm done. Hopefully I haven't offended every single one of you. Have a great day.